On February 25th, 2020, Summer Johnson Fleischauer was sitting on the stand in a courtroom in St. Croix County, Wisconsin. It was her second time testifying in a trial where she was one of the prosecution's star witnesses. She recounted to the jury a night that had gone horribly wrong back in April 2018, a night that had ended with the death of her younger brother.
When you got to the top of the stairs, what did you see?
That it was just, there was Chase there and he was lying on his back by himself. And he was bleeding really badly from his head.
Prosecutors say 19-year-old Chase Fleischauer was shot and killed that night, not by a perceived enemy or someone he had wronged, not by an obvious suspect at all.
Two kids came, one left. Summer Johnson Fleischauer left her father's home that day, changed forever by the death of her best friend, the loss of her brother, Chase Fleischauer, a kid who didn't leave. Who didn't leave because he was killed by their father.
Prosecutors say Chase Fleischauer was killed by his and Summer's own father. But their father, Cale Fleischauer, and his defense team told the court that that's not what happened at all.
Oh, it's just make up evidence. We don't have a case. And that's what they're doing. And when you go back there and you look at all this evidence, you remember what the evidence is and not what the state says or what I say, because we don't have evidence. And I could go through a litany of statements he made. I'm not going to do it. That just aren't true.
The question in today's case is, did Cale Fleischauer really kill his only son, or was it a tragic accident? It would take not one, but two juries to decide. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 146. As many of you know, I've been on the hunt to find gluten-free foods, particularly breakfast foods, that I actually enjoy. Sometimes I'm successful, and other times not so much. But I'm excited to report that I have finally found a gluten-free granola that's lower in sugar and still tastes amazing. My daughter thinks so too. Purely Elizabeth's granola adds a delicious salty sweet crunch on top of yogurt, smoothies, oatmeal, or you can just eat it right out of the bag like I do. It's that delicious. Elizabeth, the founder and certified health coach, thoughtfully crafted each granola flavor to include intentional ingredients that you don't have to feel guilty about putting into your body. Their vanilla almond butter is my personal favorite, which is made with ingredients like organic pumpkin seeds, almond butter, and sea salt. Purely Elizabeth has a ton of granola flavors to choose from, like honey almond, blueberry hemp, chocolate peanut butter, chocolate sea salt probiotic granola. I mean, the list goes on. Get 25% off your first order on all Purely Elizabeth products by using the code COURTJUNKIE at checkout on purelyelizabeth.com. That's purelyelizabeth.com and use the code COURTJUNKIE. It's time for some straight talk. Let's face it, tax returns could look a little different for a lot of us this year, but you're still going to get a lot of noise in your ear about how you should spend it. So when the big wireless carriers start trying to get you to splurge on what you don't want or need, just tune it out and go with only the best deals. Spend it on what makes you happy. With Straight Talk Wireless, you can get a Samsung Galaxy A51 for just $199. So you can listen to your favorite music wherever you go. Plus, get the $45 unlimited talk, text, and data plan with no contract on America's best networks for up to 50% less. So start the year on a high note, tune out the nonsense, and tune in to Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. The scene that night in the early morning hours of April 14th, 2018, was chaotic when first responders arrived at a home in New Richmond, Wisconsin. Outside, a winter storm, snow and sleet covering the streets, sidewalks, and trees, illuminated by the flashing lights of police vehicles. Inside the home, a storm of a different kind. The home belonged to Cale Fleischauer. Authorities were responding to a call of a male with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. When Katrina Beckstrom, an advanced emergency medical technician, walked up to the house, the front door was open. She could see a young woman. She would later learn the woman's name was Summer, covered in blood and frantically yelling for someone to help her brother. Katrina went inside and was directed to the dining room by one of the sergeants. There was a man laying on his back on the ground, with another man on top of him.
He was lying over his chest, from the left side of the patient, laying over the chest.
What, if anything, was the person doing who was laying on the patient?
They were just laying there.
She said he was a larger, bald man with no shirt on, only pajama pants. It was Cale Fleischauer, laying on top of his son, Chase. She noticed that Chase did indeed have a significant and obvious head wound on his forehead and slightly to the right. Chase was unresponsive. There was bone and brain matter around his head wound, and there were no signs of movement or of a pulse. When Chase Durand, a patrol deputy with the St. Croix County Sheriff's Office, first arrived on the scene, he saw Cale, shirtless, leaning against a wall. Another sergeant was downstairs, trying to hold back a hysterical Summer, who was desperately wanting to go back upstairs to see her brother. Deputy Durand walked past them and up the stairs. He started taking photographs, first of the body, and then of a handgun he saw on the kitchen counter. As he was taking photos, he heard Cale make some bizarre comments.
While I was taking photographs, I heard the defendant start to laugh out loud and rub his stomach in a circular motion, making comments about how fat he was.
What did you do at that point?
At that point, I stopped taking photographs. Sergeant Coleman and I thought that was strange. And we went down to the landing where the defendant was standing, and I activated my Olympus pocket recorder I had in my shirt pocket.
Sergeant Charles Coleman started asking some questions. He noticed there was blood on Cale and started taking photos of him too. This made Cale upset.
He was getting loud and exaggerated. He asked if I wanted to start something, I believe is what he said. He called me Sunshine, and then he asked if I wanted some of his ice head cock, and he pulled down the front of his pants, exposing his penis multiple times. I told him to stop, and he continued to pull down his pants.
The officers couldn't quite believe what they were seeing and hearing.
He was yelling. He was showing odd behavior. He said he's an asshole. And then he made an aggressive right turn towards me.
What's an aggressive right turn, officer?
Quick, without any warning. And then I believe he started to raise his arms when, at that point, Deputy Coleman and Deputy Proshak made a decision that for officer safety, he'd be detained in handcuffs.
By this time, Sergeant Coleman was beginning to question the initial call of a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
I was listening to Sergeant Sather question Cale from upstairs down. I was reviewing where the gun was originally located by Sergeant Sather and reviewing that the firearm where that we examined it afterwards.
Through your training and experience, Sergeant, are you taught where to look for firearms in self-inflicted gunshot wounds?
Yes.
And where are you taught to look for those firearms?
Firearm is usually still in the hands of the victim or around the body.
In this case, did you learn that the firearm was someplace besides by the body or in the victim's hand?
Yes.
Later courtroom testimony would show that before the gun had been placed on the counter, it had been placed on top of the refrigerator by another officer, who did that to secure the scene. And before that, it had been on the floor, approximately 10 feet and 10 inches from Chase's body, not next to him at all. They ended up detaining Kale and putting him in handcuffs. He was then escorted to a squad car. Meanwhile, Chase was pronounced dead at the scene. In June 2019, a little more than a year after Chase was found dead at his father's home, Kale Fleischauer went on trial for second-degree reckless homicide. Prosecutors told the jury that Kale shot Chase after getting into a physical altercation with him, while the defense said Chase shot himself, that it was either suicide or an accident. Kale testified in his defense and said he and Chase had wrestled before going to bed in the early morning hours of April 14th, 2018. He said it was after that when Chase was shot. He claimed he didn't see it and wasn't in the room when it happened. The jury didn't believe him, and Kale was convicted of reckless homicide. Before he could be sentenced, however, a surprise revelation turned the entire case on its head. One of the jurors told Kale's defense team that another juror conducted an experiment at their home prior to deliberations. This was not allowed. The jury can only base their decision on what evidence was presented at trial. And so the judge declared a mistrial, granting Kale a second chance at proving his innocence. Meanwhile, however, he was convicted of being an out-of-state felon in possession of a firearm. His sentencing for that was scheduled for after his retrial on the reckless homicide charge. Kale got his second chance on that charge in February 2020. In their opening statements, the prosecutor said that on April 13th, 2018, Chase, who was 19, and his sister Summer, who was 21, went to their father's house for the weekend. He described for the jury the layout of Kale's house. He said it was a bi-level, and so when you walk in from the outside, there's a staircase that goes downstairs and a staircase that goes up. Downstairs contains a living room, bedrooms, office area, and laundry room. Upstairs is a living area, dining area, sliding glass door that goes out to the deck, and a kitchen with an island. Summer and Chase hung out with their dad that night. They ate, they drank, they talked. At some point, he said Summer went downstairs to bed.
When Summer went to bed, she had seen no gun. When Summer went to bed, Chase Fleischauer had no injuries. And at no time, while Chase and Summer were at the defendant's home, did anyone else come there. It was always, for the entire time we're talking about, the three of them at that house.
He said Summer heard noises coming from upstairs and ran up to the kitchen. Her father was nowhere to be seen, but there was her brother laying on the floor of the kitchen in front of the island, shot in the head and laying in his own blood. The prosecutor said Chase had multiple injuries on him, including a fractured skull. He said Kale finally came out from the hallway, from where he keeps his pistols. Summer screamed at him, but Kale wouldn't do anything, insisting Chase was fine. He said Summer called 911 and that Kale wouldn't give her any information or help at all. He told the jury there was initial confusion in the call. Summer said to the dispatcher, "I think my brother was shot in the head." The dispatcher said back to her, "You think your brother shot himself in the head?" He said that's why law enforcement initially thought it was reported as a self-inflicted gunshot wound. As the officers were trying to figure out what happened, he said Kale was rubbing his belly, yelling at them, and he even told them he was right there when it happened. The prosecutor conceded that there were no identifiable fingerprints found on the gun. There was no DNA found on the gun either, aside from Chase's DNA, just inside the opening of the barrel. He told the jury that the gun was found on the floor, more than 10 feet away from Chase, and that there was a matching holster and fully loaded magazine found in Kale's bedroom on the nightstand. Both men had their shirts off. Kale's shirt, which he said had Chase's blood all over it, was found over by the dining room table, which was pushed up against the wall. Chase's shirt was found down by the entryway. The prosecutor told the jury that Chase was bleeding and injured before he was shot.
Chase was so injured before he was shot that in bleeding, he was walking around in his sock feet with holes in his socks that left a very clear imprint on the floor. But he couldn't have been walking after he was shot because of where he was shot, in the head, boom, down, on the floor, done, never moving again.
He said the medical examiner's report will say the cause of death was a gunshot wound and that the manner of death is a homicide, not an accident. But when Earl Gray, Kale's defense attorney, spoke to the jury, he said there was no fight and that Kale was a hands-on dad who loved his children. He told the jury that Chase was a drunk 19-year-old who was likely looking at the gun when it went off. Take coloring your hair at home to the next level with Madison Reed. Now, you might be wondering how you would find the right color, and then what about the cost? Well, Madison Reed makes coloring your hair at home affordable, and they give you the tools you need to make it easy to choose your perfect color. For just $22, Madison Reed gives you beautiful, professional hair color delivered right to your door. And Madison Reed's color is unique. It's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous multidimensional shades. To find your perfect shade, just go to their website, madison-reed.com, and take their quick online quiz that will ask you some simple questions about your hair and your goals. So do your hair coloring at home and look as if you just came from the salon. Court Junkies can get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit by using the code COURT. Go to madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. That's madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. We all have guilty pleasures, right? Mine might be listening to Phil Collins songs and encouraging my 2-year-old daughter to dance and lip sync around the house with me. But you know what I don't have to feel guilty about enjoying? Best Fiends. Best Fiends gives me an endless source of fun that I can access anytime right on my phone. Best Fiends is a match 3 puzzle game like none other. I've been playing for a while now and I'm a little obsessed. My favorite time to play lately is during my recording days, in between recording episodes. I'm well past 200 levels now, and Christy from Canadian True Crime and I have a friendly little competition going. With Best Fiends, there's something new today and tomorrow and every day after that. Literally thousands of levels to play and counting, plus tons of cute characters to collect. So if you never get tired of solving puzzles, good news. With Best Fiends, the fun never ends. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. In April 2018, Summer Johnson Fleischauer and her brother, Chase Fleischauer, headed to New Richmond to spend the weekend with their father. It wasn't something they did often. Their parents had been divorced ever since Summer was 5 and Chase was 3. They had initially lived with their mom, but would go over to their dad's house on Mondays and Wednesdays, although after a while, they stopped going there altogether. In fact, Summer didn't talk to her dad very often. Nowadays, anytime the siblings would go visit their dad, there was typically someone else around, like his girlfriend or their grandparents. On April 11th, about a week prior, Summer testified that she had received a phone call from her father.
And why do you recall that conversation?
Because it was so bizarre and he never calls me. It was so out of the ordinary. It was unexpected.
Can you tell me about that phone call?
He called me late that night, and he was talking about a variety of things. He talked about what I was supposed to do in the event that he died. I was supposed to kick his girlfriend out of the home that he resides with. And I was supposed to, like if he were on life support, I was supposed to give him 30 days on life support before removing him from that. He had talked about the fact that he was depressed. And we had talked a bit about my grandpa because my grandpa had recently passed away. And then he brought up what to do. He wanted, in the event that I died, he'd wanted stuff put in place too. He wanted my social security number and said if something were to happen to me, he should be on the title of my van and on my checking accounts. When I told him I didn't own anything, that anything would have to be done for, and he brought up my van and my checking accounts.
Was this a normal conversation that you would have with the defendant?
No.
She said her grandfather, Kale's father, had passed away in March, and they were planning a celebration of life gathering for the following weekend. Kale told her that he needed to see his kids and asked if they could come over. She agreed that she and Chase would go over there on that following Friday. "Dad sounds really messed up. We should go over there this weekend," she texted her brother. So later on that Friday, Chase came over and they drove together to their dad's house. They got there around 6 p.m. It was just Kale there waiting for them, which Summer thought was unusual. Usually, there was always someone else around. Summer told the jury that they sat around the dining room table and ate and talked. Kale had made them chicken. She was drinking a vodka lemonade while Chase and Kale were drinking beer. She testified that she was drinking casually, but Chase was drinking quickly. Kale kept telling him to drink faster, and every time Kale would get up to get himself a new beer, he'd get one for Chase, too. She said they talked about a variety of things that night, guns, politics, and other things about their lives. Kale told them that he had inherited some guns from their grandfather, who had just passed away. He said one of the guns was on top of the fridge, quote, "in the event an Iraqi came into the house," he said, "he would show them what's up." Then the conversation switched to a new tattoo Summer had recently had done on her leg. She showed the two of them and said her dad outright told her that it sucked and that he knew a guy who could have done a better job. She said Chase then asked her about an argument she had gotten into with a friend of hers.
Chase had asked me, "Are you and Jerry friends again?" And I had said no. And my dad said, "Well, why aren't you guys friends?" And Chase had told him because we had had an argument. And then my dad started to say, he started to just get aggressive towards Chase and told him, "Why are you letting people fuck with your sister? You need to man up. You need to man the fuck up." And he kept telling him to man up repeatedly. And then he called him a pussy.
After he called Chase a pussy, how did Chase respond?
Chase just looked at me.
What was the expression on his face, if you remember?
He was kind of shocked and then looked at me to respond.
How did you respond to the defendant then?
I told him to knock it off. Don't talk to him like that.
During the course of the evening, Summer was taking photos with Snapchat. Those photos were shown to the jury. At about 1 a.m., she went downstairs into one of the bedrooms to sleep. Chase and her dad were still awake and sitting at the dining room table. A short time later, she was awakened by noises upstairs.
I could hear motion coming from upstairs, like motion, and then I heard one of them yell, "fuck you," and the other one yelled, "fuck you," and I could hear Chase say, "I would never hit my father."
How do you know who it was that was saying, "fuck you, fuck you"?
I couldn't tell which one of them had said it and then said it back, but I could tell from Chase's voice that I would never hit my father because it was long enough for me to hear and tell, distinguish that was Chase's voice.
The words that you heard being said by the defendant and your brother, is that what initially woke you up?
Yes.
After you heard Chase say, "I would never hit my father," what, if anything, did you do?
I yelled upstairs and said, "Chase, it's time for bed. Chase, come to bed."
Why did you tell Chase to come to bed?
Because it was late and I could hear him upstairs. So I yelled for him to come down to bed.
To the best of your knowledge, did Chase come downstairs then after you told him to come to bed with you?
No.
The next thing she remembers is hearing a very loud noise coming from upstairs. She said it sounded like a wooden chair hitting the hardwood floor, sharp and loud. She jumped out of bed and ran upstairs. When she got to the top of the stairs, that's when she saw Chase's body and started screaming for her dad.
As you're screaming for your dad, where is he, if you know?
I started screaming, and then he came from one of the rooms from the hallway. So he came out of the hallway area into where I was.
On the upper level?
Yes.
Okay. And what were you screaming at your dad to do?
I screamed to call 911. I was screaming at him to call 911.
And what's happening as you're telling him to call 911?
He's saying, it's okay. He's okay. And then he's saying, Summer, listen, listen. And then he kept saying, it's okay. And then I started screaming at him to call 911. And then he started reaching for his phone that was on the island.
When the defendant grabbed his cell phone, what happened?
I was telling him to call 911 and he said no. And then I was saying, give me your phone. I was screaming at him to give me the phone then, and he was saying no. I said, give me your fucking phone, and he wouldn't, and then he held it up over his head when I was trying to grab it from him. And then I ran downstairs to go get my phone.
She called 911 from her phone and ran back upstairs to be by her brother. She said she didn't remember what the address was, so she asked her dad. To her surprise, he wouldn't give it to her. She saw some mail on the counter, and reading from an envelope, she gave the address listed on there. Her 911 call was played in court. She could be heard pleading with her dad to help her with the address.
Repeat the address so I know I have it correct, ma'am.
Let me see. Okay, look at this. 142nd Street? I'm not entirely sure. Please.
She told the court that she then tried to give her brother CPR.
What was the defendant doing while you were doing this, if you know?
He was trying to pull me off of him.
Was he saying anything?
He was saying he's already gone.
Summer collapsed into tears, and the judge called a recess. On cross-examination, Kale's attorney questioned Summer about earlier statements she had made to investigators. She was asked if she said at a hearing under oath that her dad didn't give her his phone because she thought he was too drunk and flustered. She said no. Her statement read, quote, "I don't know if he couldn't get into his phone because he was so drunk and flustered." She said she doesn't remember saying that, but that it was speculation on her part. Another statement was read where she told police that her dad didn't give her the address, that she thought he had attempted to, but he didn't successfully give it to her. She agreed she had said that. After Summer's testimony, prosecutors presented evidence by way of a body camera worn by one of the officers that night.
What happened here tonight, Gil?
I have no idea.
No idea?
No. No.
What happened last night? Were you working on Friday?
No, I was not working on Friday.
Okay. Yesterday was Friday. What were you doing Friday afternoon?
I was not working.
Hey, guess what?
Okay.
Well, I'm an asshole. For what?
In the recording, you can clearly hear Kale in the background, at times taunting, laughing, and yelling at the officers. Sergeant Charles Coleman described the scene for the jury, including how hysterical Summer was.
I see the female in the living room area screaming and lunging towards the EMS and Sergeant Sather. And so I went directly to them to try to control the scene. And and tell them, let them work, let them work.
So what did you do?
I created a barrier by placing myself in between Summer and Kale, who were knelt in the living room area, and the body and the EMS personnel.
Why did you do that?
Because Summer was yelling, screaming frantically, and lunging towards the scene.
He said Summer had a moderate amount of blood on her hands and clothing. She was lunging towards her brother. Kale, meanwhile, was emotionless.
You just described Kale as emotionless?
The only thing I saw him doing objectively was restraining Summer.
He said other officers arrived, and they asked Kale to leave the area.
And did he?
He did.
And how did, what observations, if any, did you make about him walking from the living room area?
He had difficulty walking down the stairs with his balance. He had a very strong odor of alcohol coming from his person. And when I later talked to him, I observed other features.
Sergeant Coleman said he did a walkthrough of the scene. He retrieved the gun from the hallway and put it on top of the fridge. Another sergeant later then moved it to the island so they could take photos of it. He asked Kale if he was upstairs when the shooting occurred, and Kale replied, no, I was, but then gestured to the upstairs area where Chase was laying. He asked Kale what happened. Kale told him he didn't remember. He then asked for Kale's name. Kale answered his first and middle name, but wouldn't say his last name. He then said, I'm going to tell you how it is. I didn't kill my Chase. Sergeant Coleman said Kale was using a door to prop himself up, and he was swaying back and forth.
I believe this is when Deputy Durand is in front of him taking photographs, and he's like, what's up, sunshine? He then exposes genitals to Deputy Durand.
Does he say anything?
Said he wants some cock.
How many times does he say that, if you know?
Three. He raised up his arms and started walking towards Deputy Durand. At that point, I blanketed his left arm.
Kale was put into handcuffs and into a squad car. Dr. Kelly Mills has performed over 6,000 autopsies. She testified about Chase's injuries and was asked about blood on the bottom of Chase's socks. When could that have happened? She said it indicates to her that Chase was able to walk and wasn't significantly unable to do so. At some point, he was walking over his blood prior to the gunshot wound, she said. She was asked about injuries on Chase's face that were not related to the gunshot wound.
You can see the two contusions on the nose. Those are not related to the gunshot wound, so those existed prior to being shot, as well as there's some faint contusions on the left cheek that we'll discuss later, but there's some, about three of them, that are on that left cheek region and jawline as well that occurred prior and does not have anything to do with the gunshot wound.
Dr. Mills noted that Chase had tiny red bruises on both of his eyelids, often called petechiae, which were also unrelated to the gunshot. This happened before he was shot. She said some causes of petechiae include having pressure around the neck or direct contact with the neck, prolonged strenuous activity, such as a woman going through labor, prolonged fights, and then rare, but in some cases, it can happen during CPR. Photos from the autopsy were shown to the jury. She pointed out bruising on the back of his left ear that extended to the back of his head. That was from blunt force trauma, she said. Something struck his left ear. She also noted an abrasion on the left side of his neck, which she said could have been the cause of the petechiae. This also occurred prior to the gunshot wound. There were numerous other injuries Chase had that Dr. Mills said occurred prior to the gunshot, including bruises on his left cheek and jawline, contusions and lacerations on his lower lip, contusions and abrasions on his right index finger, abrasions on the back of his right forearm and on top of his right foot, abrasions on the left side of his chest, and contusions on the back of his left upper arm and forearm. Perhaps even more notably, Dr. Mills testified that he had a linear skull fracture on the back of his head, a completely separate wound from the gunshot, she said, causing blood to come out of his ear. This also occurred prior to the gunshot. Dr. Mills ruled the cause of death as cerebral lacerations due to a gunshot wound to the head, and said that once he was shot, he would not have been able to move. The trajectory of the shot, she said, was front to back, slightly right to left, and straight. Chase's blood alcohol concentration was 0.278. Jim Mikla, an investigator with the St. Croix County Sheriff's Office, took the stand and told the jury that when Chase's body was found, he noticed that his feet had been entangled with a stool.
He was laying on his back in the dining room area of that residence with blood all around him.
What, if any, injury did you observe when you were there?
I observed what I believe to be a gunshot wound to the left side of his forehead.
What, if anything, was at or around his feet?
There was a stool, and his legs were entangled in that stool.
Was there any firearm in his vicinity?
No.
Investigator Mikla also noticed signs of a possible struggle in the living room. In addition to there being a lot of blood, he saw that the dining room table was pushed up against a wall, so much so that people wouldn't have been able to sit all around it. He also noticed a plant hanging from the wall with a couple of dog dishes underneath it on the floor. Inside one of the dog dishes was plant material. An unspent shell casing lay on the floor. On top of the refrigerator, he saw a BB gun in between some egg cartons. There was no blood on the floor in front of the fridge. Back at the police station, he examined Kale for injuries.
I noticed a mark on his back.
Anything else?
And a swollen hand.
Investigator Mikla also testified that he test-fired the gun found at the scene and concluded that the range that Chase was shot from was 5 to 6 inches. On cross-examination, he said Summer told him that she thought Kale was too drunk to get into his phone. He also told the jury that he sent in gunshot residue samples and that the swabs from both Summer and Kale's hands were negative. The only person who had any gunshot residue on their hands was Chase. Corey Burton is a firearms expert called by the defense and who is also a friend of Kale's. He told the jury that he owns a company called Confidence Gun Safety and Self-Defense. He testified that he conducted a series of experiments to see how far the gun could go after being fired. He concluded that it could have recoiled up to 10 feet away from Chase's body if Chase had shot himself. On cross-examination, Burton conceded that he didn't follow any scientific method, just his own experiments, and that he didn't take into account how Chase may have been seated at the time. In other words, he didn't replicate the scene. The prosecution also brought up a Facebook message Burton had sent to Summer during the first trial, in which he asked her to forgive her father. The defense also called Dr. Stephen Treadle to the stand, who looked at Chase's additional injuries, other than the gunshot wound. He testified that the injuries could be consistent with being drunk and wrestling on the floor. He said the petechiae could have been the cause if someone were restrained during a wrestling match. Dr. Mary Dunn, a neurosurgeon, said there are 5 steps of bereavement and grief. The first is denial, then anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. She said that during the denial phase, you could see all sorts of reactions, and alcohol can make it worse.
And the reason is that alcohol changes the inhibitions. And so so if someone is inclined to laugh or cry, or they'll just do it more because the inhibitions are released by the alcohol.
Dr. Jonathan Arden, who has his own consultant practice in forensic pathology and medicine, testified that he reviewed all the documents in the case and that in his opinion, the cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head with brain injury and the manner of death is an accident. He said first, Chase's high blood alcohol content likely resulted in loss of judgment and fine motor skills.
Given that, we have a gunshot wound to the forehead that has evidence of being at a close to intermediate range. There was test firing of the gun done, and the test firing at roughly 5 to 6 inches was very consistent with the findings on the actual gunshot wound itself. So we have a gunshot wound to the forehead at a distance that is close enough to be self-inflicted, although in contrast, it is not the type of gunshot wound I would expect for a suicide. Those are almost always contact gunshot wounds where the muzzle of the gun is touching the skin surface at the time it's discharged. So we have a wound that's consistent with being self-inflicted. We have a decedent, Mr. Chase Fleischauer, who at the time was highly intoxicated. We have a gunshot wound that's consistent with him in that state, looking at the barrel of the gun from a fairly close distance. We have his intoxicated state in terms of his impairment that would render him more susceptible to an accidental discharge under those conditions. I further have the recoil testing of the gun done by Mr. Burton, and I've reviewed those videos indicating that that weapon, if not held very tightly, could easily recoil and be projected over some significant distance. So the purported finding of the gun not being directly with or underneath him is not inconsistent with a self-inflicted accidental gunshot wound. And then I subsequently was informed as to laboratory testing that is also relevant. We have DNA from Mr. Chase Fleischauer found on the gun and nobody else. We have gunshot residues on the hands of Mr. Chase Fleischauer and not on other occupants of the house. So the totality of those circumstances of an intoxicated person holding a gun and probably looking at the muzzle all are consistent with the circumstances and the testing that I've just summarized for you. To the contrary, as I said, this gunshot wound does not have the appearance that suggests a suicide, an intentional self-inflicted wound, but rather an accidental one. But in addition to all of those factors, I have no other facts or factors derived from the investigation, the autopsy, the laboratory testing, that indicates to me that he was shot by another. So in other words, I have no evidence specifically that would tell me this was a homicide.
As for Chase's other injuries, he said it's not accurate that they all occurred at the same time, just prior to the gunshot wound.
If you look at the prior injuries, the other injuries besides the gunshot wound, indeed, they all do look to be fresh or acute. However, from a strictly medical standpoint, those fresh appearing injuries could have happened seconds before death, minutes before death, hours before death. Some of those injuries are, again, from a strictly medical or pathological standpoint, consistent with having happened up to as much as a day before death. So the fact that they all look to be quote unquote fresh doesn't limit them medically to have occurred at or about the same time. They could have all occurred at about the same time prior to death, but the medical evidence doesn't permit a conclusion that they did occur at the same time.
He said the temporal bone fracture occurred at the same time as the gunshot. He testified that he saw no indication that this was caused by another person. On cross, the prosecutor pointed out how he continuously brought up Chase's alcohol consumption.
You mentioned Chase Fleischauer's intoxication four times as a significant factor in your talk with us today. Do you remember that?
I didn't keep count, but I do remember citing it as an important factor.
Oh, four times. If you said it here four times, that would seem like in your mind it's a pretty big deal, correct?
I think it is an important factor, yes, sir.
And one of the things you said about it was it has an impairment of fine motor skills, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You also said it has an impairment of judgment, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You're a forensic pathologist, and most of the time you deal with dead people, right?
In terms of who I examine or consult on, mostly, not entirely, but mostly.
All right. But this is an opinion about how 0.278 would influence a living, breathing person, correct?
Well, it's entirely within the purview of forensic pathology. Among the various things that you're required to do as a forensic pathologist is to interpret the effects of diseases and injuries, including intoxications on people, in part because if you don't know as a physician what those things, what the effects are of those things on human activity, then you're not able to make the ultimate conclusion that you're charged with, which is, did this or did this not cause death? So intoxication is a frequent topic of analysis in forensic pathology.
Dr. Arden was then asked about Kale's blood alcohol concentration and what that would do to a person.
What would a blood alcohol count of 0.44 do to a person's judgment?
Well, first of all, answering the question of what would any given blood alcohol concentration do to any given person depends in part on that person's experience with alcohol. But as a fair generalization, a 0.44, which is a very high blood alcohol concentration, is likely to cause significant and severe impairment of judgment of most people under most circumstances. It's a high enough blood alcohol concentration that you're now into the realm of what is potentially lethal.
And it certainly could impair how one might go about handling a firearm.
Yes, sir.
On rebuttal, prosecutors had another expert testify to the manner of death.
In your decision to concur in Dr. Mills's opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that the manner of death was homicide.
The presence of injuries present other than gunshot wounds.
And what role do those external injuries play in the decision that it was a homicide?
They are part of the overall examination that's done. Normally in suicides, not in all cases, but normally in suicides, you certainly get firearm deaths. You'll have a gunshot wound, wherever it may be located. And generally, you have no other injuries present to the body. In this particular case, since there were other injuries, that is a some concern.
He said Chase's skull fractures occurred at the same time as the other injuries, and that it was consistent with him having been in a fight. In his closing arguments, the prosecutor told the jury that Summer and Chase went to their father's house. Only Summer left. Chase didn't leave because he was killed by their father. He asked the jury to apply their common sense to the law. He is guilty of reckless homicide, he said.
Another unfortunate consequence of popular media today is that whenever the phrase circumstantial evidence is used, it's usually prefaced with something like only or just. Oh, you've read through the instruction with Judge Needham, and you can see that the words only circumstantial evidence or just circumstantial evidence do not appear in the legal instruction because it is not necessary that every fact be proved directly by a witness or an exhibit. So the proof of the fact of the defendant, I'm sorry, of Kale Fleischauer, this person shooting Chase Fleischauer, is not required to be proved by a video or an audio recording of the event for it to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Common sense tells us that most crimes aren't committed in front of people. And we are not in a place in America yet where there's video cameras in every room, living room, bathroom, hallway, or street.
He addressed the fact that there were no identifiable fingerprints found on Kale's gun. He said there are many reasons for that, and pointed out that even though it was Kale's gun, his fingerprints weren't on there.
No usable prints of the person whose gun it is on their own gun. Doesn't mean he didn't shoot.
He also addressed the fact that Kale's DNA or blood was nowhere to be found. But that's the circumstantial evidence, he said. Kale was never injured.
Without DNA, we have the circumstantial evidence of who won the fight. All the blood that was found and identified is Chase's. He lost the fight. Two fractures in his skull before he was shot. He lost the fight. That's the circumstantial evidence.
Chase's DNA was also found on the gun, around the muzzle. He said the fact that Kale's was not found doesn't mean anything.
He was excluded. He was excluded as a contributor to the DNA on the bottom of the magazine that was loaded into the pistol that shot Chase Fleischauer. To the best of my recollection of the evidence, and I'll leave it to you to recall what you recall from the evidence, there's no evidence of this being anyone's gun but Kale Fleischauer's. So when we say no defendant, no Kale Fleischauer DNA on the pistol, and that's somehow exculpatory, we say, no. Because if we were to adopt that reasoning and walk it all the way through, then this isn't the Kale Fleischauer's gun.
He said, for example, on the shirt Kale was wearing, his DNA also wasn't found. Chase's was. But there's a photograph of Kale wearing that shirt, so we know he wore it. And regarding the 20-something granules of gunshot residue found on Chase's hands, he said this.
First of all, the people who prepared that report told us that GSR can be deposited by circumstances such as discharging a firearm, being in the proximity of discharging a firearm, or coming into contact with a surface or object that has gunshot residue on it. So what Dr. McGee said to you is this strengthened their opinion regarding this being a homicide because the GSR being on Chase proved that he was in the proximity of a discharging firearm. And that's all it proved.
He told the jury that they know it's a homicide because of the injuries Chase suffered prior to his death. He said it's evidence that he was beat up and that Kale brought a pistol to a fist fight. He said there is no case of anyone ever being beaten up before an accidental shooting. He said Dr. Arden, the defense's expert witness, chose to not consider the beating and chose to say it was an accidental shooting. We need to talk about the completeness of his work, he said.
He never saw photos of Chase before the shooting like you have. He never saw photos of the scene from the first responders in the crime lab like you have. He never listened to any recording of anyone's voice at the scene, nor did he view any video recordings of the scene like the crime lab like you have. He reviewed none of the police reports in the case. He reviewed one crime lab report that he couldn't remember what lab it was from, that he didn't list in his report that he said had to do with DNA. He reviewed no other facts in this case and concluded that all of Chase's injuries had nothing to do with whether this was a homicide or an accidental death.
Dr. Arden resigned from his position in 2003 as the chief medical examiner in Washington, D.C., after the Inspector General's office found that his office had failed to meet its basic mission, the complete and prompt investigation of unexpected deaths. The prosecutor said Dr. Arden's work here in this trial was no more complete than it was in 2003. He said that every expert who testified, however, agreed on one thing.
What we do know here is that Arden, Treadle, Mills, McGee, all agree Chase was in a fight.
This man is the one who fought him.
He said in order to prove second-degree reckless homicide, the state has to show that Cale caused the death of Chase. He pulled out the shirt Chase had been wearing that night, which had blood on the front and back and was torn up the side and around the collar. Chase was in a fight. Chase lost, he said. He then exclaimed, "Let's see who won," and held up the shirt Cale had been wearing. This shirt had no visible damage to it. Not even his own DNA was found on his shirt. "And somehow that's supposed to show he didn't shoot Chase?" he asked.
"Really? Really?"
He said the jury may be asked to accept the hypothesis that Chase, injured and bleeding, stumbling around with a fractured skull, somehow then chose to go look for a pistol Cale claims was on top of the fridge. He showed a photo taken of Cale that night around 8 p.m. with the fridge in the background. No pistol could be seen on top.
Four times, Dr. Arden says, "He's drunk, he's drunk, he's drunk, he's drunk." He would say something else and then he'd go back to drunk. And I said to him, "You just said like four times, the only reason you're coming to the conclusion that this is an accident is because he was drunk, he was drunk, he was drunk, he was drunk. What is it about being drunk that makes this young, poor, injured man decide to go looking for a gun that one isn't there? Nothing. Which is why this hypothesis, which is to be based upon reason and common sense, is not reasonable."
He said Sergeant Sather put the gun on top of the fridge after finding it on the floor. He pointed out that the pistol's holster was on Cale's nightstand, along with the extra magazine. He said Summer did say there was a conversation that night about a gun being on top of the fridge, but a photo taken earlier shows that it was a BB gun, not the pistol used to kill Chase. He said if Chase had, after he was beaten up, went to the top of the fridge to get a gun, there would be blood there, and there isn't. He surmised that when Summer came running upstairs and didn't see Cale, he was in the hallway with the gun. Caught as Summer came upstairs, he then dropped it there.
"The only question before you, Cale Fleischauer caused the death of Chase Fleischauer. His conduct in bringing the pistol to the fistfight was a substantial factor in producing the death. Those are the elements of the crime he is charged with."
In his closing arguments, Cale's defense attorney told the jury they need to decide whether Cale shot his only son. "It's not about the fight or the injuries," he said. He said Cale did not shoot him. Chase accidentally shot himself in the head. And before that happened, he said Chase and Cale were involved in an altercation.
"And as far as what these two guys, the father and son, did before that, was it a wrestling match? Was it a fist fight? You decide. It was an altercation, and it appeared to be that they were wrestling, tossing each other around. My client, the father, the son wants to prove to him that he can take him, and it went on for a period of time. But those injuries that that Chase Fleischauer received, they called Dr. Treadle. He went and looked at the autopsy. Most of the injuries are not that serious. They're minor bruises, which you would receive when you're under the influence of alcohol and you're wrestling with your father on a hard ground. And to say he had no injuries, he didn't have as many injuries, but he had a scratch on his elbow and a bruise on his back. You saw the picture of the bruise."
He showed a photo of the nightstand in Cale's bedroom. There was a blue towel hanging over it. He said that towel wouldn't be there if Cale went into the nightstand and took the gun out of the holster. It would have fallen off. "They have no evidence that he went into his room and got a gun," he said. He said that photos show that a blanket on Cale's bed was messed up, proving that he had gone to lay down in it. He said after Cale went to bed, Chase went outside, as evidenced by footprints in the snow, then came back in and got the gun from the top of the fridge, where he was told the gun was at.
So he has the gun, and the next thing, he's in the living room. Either he came from the refrigerator with the gun, or he went out on the deck with the footprints and came back in. But in the living room, there's an unspent shell of this gun. And the expert said that that unspent shell came from that Taurus. Now think about that for a minute. Why would that shell be there? That shell would be there only if Chase Fleischauer was checking to see if it was loaded. Because my client, he put the gun up there. He knew it was loaded. But if Chase had taken that and ejected a shell, and the shell is there, and the expert says that shell was ejected from that gun, so that's evidence undisputed. He takes it and he ejects it, and his hand gets on that barrel. You've seen the barrel, it's 3.5 inches, about 3 inches, but he touches it. And then he goes over, and we know he sat on the stool. We've heard that from Stalky. We know that, and he's on the stool, he's drunk, as Dr. Arden said, he's a young 19-year-old drunk with a gun, a loaded gun. And he doesn't realize it's loaded because he had ejected a shell. So he's looking at the gun and it went off. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a reasonable explanation of what happened here based on the circumstantial evidence.
If Chase was hit hard on the head, where was the weapon, he asked. And if he hit the ground, where's that evidence? He said the fractures were caused by the bullet and that Dr. Arden agreed. He said the prosecution can't rule out an accident, that they didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Do the right thing, he said. The jury deliberated for about 3 hours before rendering their decision.
The verdict that has been returned reads as follows. We, the jury, duly impaneled, as and for our verdict in the above-captioned matter, find Cale Allen Fleischauer guilty of second-degree reckless homicide.
At Cale's sentencing, Chase's family members and friends painted the picture of a 19-year-old young man who is kind-hearted, someone who looked for the good in everything. He was a gifted athlete and had dreams of traveling and starting a family one day. Cale was sentenced to the maximum, 20 years in prison and 10 years of extended supervision. As for his other charges, being an out-of-state felon in possession of a firearm, he received 2 years for that. Cale apologized in court and said, "I have to live without my children every day." And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think about this case. How would you have voted if you were on the jury? Let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. As always, if you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads and get access to additional Court Junkie bonus episodes, go to courtjunkie.com/support. And lastly, make sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel to see some behind-the-scenes videos, as well as videos from Sidebar, my after show that is released right here on this feed, as well as on YouTube. That's at youtube.com/courtjunkie. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. I spend a lot more time looking at my computer and phone nowadays, and that's probably the case for many of us. But as a result, I started noticing that my eyes would feel heavy, and I've been having problems sleeping too. So what I did was order a pair of Blue Blocks glasses. Blue light from our screens tends to damage our eyes and leads to digital eye strain, and Blue Blocks was created to block out the blue light with high-quality lenses. Unlike other types of blue light glasses, Blue Blocks are backed by evidence and made under Optics Laboratory conditions in Australia. Blue Blocks has over 40 stylish frames to choose from, and they come in prescription, non-prescription, and readers. So they have something for everyone. I just ordered the Hudson Style computer glasses, and I am so excited to try them out. So get your energy back, sleep better, and block out the unhealthy effects of blue light with Blue Blocks. Get free shipping worldwide and 15% off by going to blueblocks.com/courtjunkie or enter the code courtjunkie at checkout. That's blueblocks.com/courtjunkie for 15% off or just use the code courtjunkie.